I think you have to have a tremendous instinct as a designer and say, I wouldn't do it this way. And then you have to test all those assumptions because you're often wrong.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 20, part 2 of 2. If you missed the first part of this interview, I do recommend checking it out, but it's not critical before listening to this one. There were a few spots of audio challenges, but thankfully not enough to where you couldn't understand what was being said. If you did tune into part one, you know that Jeffrey dropped some big value bombs and was so vulnerable and transparent because that's just who he is. Well, dare I say he drops even more in this episode. So thanks for tuning in to part two of my unforgettable interview with the godfather of web design, Jeffrey Zeldman. Jeffrey, what's your design superpower?
I think it's the ability to talk and communicate, honestly.
Yeah.
I never learn the buzzwords, no matter how time I spend in this field. I still talk like I'm not a professional web designer, developer. I still speak in down-to-earth terms, and I think it's really helpful. I went through a very brief period of extreme pretension in my early 20s in the way I expressed myself. Mm-hmm. I wanted everyone to know how smart I was. That was like the one thing about myself that I was proud of, I guess. And man, it's a big mistake. There are lots of kinds of writers that I like, but every once in a while it's important to reread somebody like Hemingway, or my favorite is Dashiell Hammett, who writes, you know, with like a fourth grade vocabulary, right?
Yeah.
Simple words, and conveys all this rich stuff without saying it, and thinks about people as people and what they need and how to communicate. With web standards, I know, is a classic example of that, because the web standards movement, I was definitely the dumbest person in the room. All these brilliant people figuring out all this stuff, but they were communicating in a way that made sense to other geniuses, but definitely was not even slightly interesting to Joe site owner or Joe designer or Joe Jane developer. Like, you know, there was nothing in what they were saying that explained why it made sense to separate content from presentation. They didn't even feel the need to explain that, but they did. Somebody needed to explain it. And I feel like my design superpower, whether I'm with my client or just writing about design, is to be able to listen, synthesize, and feed back what I think is happening in a way that seems to make sense. And I know that there are other people I love listening to who will say things, and I go, I told, when Mike Montero wrote Design is a Job, it was two things. First of all, it's an absolutely brilliant book, and I couldn't have written it. It's his voice. It's him.
Sure.
But at the same time, in this one way, I identified so strongly with what he was saying that I said, I feel like I wrote it. And it didn't mean I could, right? It didn't mean any of those thoughts. It meant, as he was saying these things, I was going, yes, that's right. Yes, yes, that's, I felt that. I felt that. I didn't know to say it. I felt that. And I think probably that's his superhero power, is the ability to communicate things that, and have people go, yeah, yeah, I feel that. And I think that's mine too, I hope.
No, I it is. I definitely would agree with you. And I got to tell you, I love that you don't get caught up in the buzzwords. You don't get caught up with where everybody thinks things are going. You don't get caught up with feeling like you have to call it something. I just love that you kind of kept that childlike innocence about you. And because you don't really care what people think about whether what you're saying or what you're calling it. And you're just calling it what it is. And I appreciate that about you, Jeff. Jeffrey.
Thank you. Apparently, I am somewhat childlike. I wasn't. My child tells me this. Right? Calls me baby man and stuff. And but I think it's true in some strange way. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and that's great. And I think we all kind of want more of that in ourselves, just to kind of, like I said earlier, not get so caught up with worrying about what people are going to think, but just doing the work that we need to do.
Yeah, well, it's the difference between, it's the difference between having a wedding day where the whole time you're going, is it special enough? Does my dad feel okay? Does my mom feel okay? Is my bride, do I look good? Should I pick the other suit? Or just going, I'm so happy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my daughter.
There's the people that I love. Oh, I'm happy.
Absolutely. Yeah, my daughter put her hair in a ponytail toward the front this morning on her way to school, and she's like, "I want to try a different thing with my hair." And I said, "That's awesome, honey. You look beautiful. You look cute." And will a kid make fun of her at the playground? Maybe, but you know what? I'm not gonna say. You know, you might get made fun of. You might not want to do that. No, do it. Go and do that thing.
My daughter doesn't seem to care as much about that stuff as I did.
Yeah, that's awesome.
She just says, I don't care what they think.
Love it. That's she's a true creative, I think.
Yeah, she's definitely a true creative. I don't know how she does that. I still care too much what people think.
Yeah.
Remember when you were like, one nice thing about turning 40 is you don't really care what people think about your record collection. You don't care as much.
True.
Like if you have a Don Ho album or a Robert Goulet album that you like, you can just play it. Or you know what? If you like Yes, you know, you can admit it. You don't have to go like, no, I only listen to punk or I only listen to hip hop or whatever.
Yep.
You can just admit that you have different tastes and some of them may be not to everyone's liking, and that's okay.
That's right. Gord's Gold. Gordon Lightfoot, baby. I love it. I spin that one. Yeah, man. Carefree Highway. Barely Man Enough. Barry Manilow.
Barry Manilow.
Yeah. Yeah. Mandy. Yeah. What a great ballad.
To his dog, right?
I believe so. Yeah, it was for his dog.
And Martha, my dear, Paul McCartney, was to his dog also.
That's awesome. Now, Jeffrey, adversely, what's your design kryptonite?
Bullying. Like we were saying moments ago, I react very badly. If people can steamroller me, and I think it's my worst my best characteristic as a boss is that I hire good people and let them do what they do and try not to interfere, right? And my worst characteristic is that I'm not always strong enough, even when I'm really, so let's say that you're working with me on something and you're the designer and I brought the project in. I'm the creative director.
Yeah.
If you feel passionately, I'm going to go with what you say. I'm not going to go with what I say. And that's a good thing. But the bad thing is if I think you're making a mistake, but you get petulant about it, I'll back off. I shouldn't do that. I should go, I know you're upset, but I strongly disagree, and we're going to do this my way this time. I don't do that. I have some employees that just like walk on me, I got to say. That sounds weird. But, I don't mean it as a huge problem. I just mean there are times when I'm not the loudest voice in my company, which is good. But I don't know. I feel like there's times when I could be stronger. I got to work on that.
Yeah, and I appreciate you sharing that, Jeffrey, because I feel like when you surround yourself with great people and you empower them to do great work, I think it's okay to not be. You don't feel as compelled to be the bully. The bully is a strong word, but to be the boss, to be the one in charge. When you have great people, they're going to do even greater work when they feel empowered by you and entrusted by you.
That's absolutely true.
Right?
That's absolutely true. It's only when it's my area of expertise, not theirs, and I feel like they're wrong, but I feel myself like not pushing back hard enough.
I see.
And I'm better with clients. I'm not afraid of clients. I'm just afraid of people I'm close to. afraid to confront them.
Yeah, well, this next question is a great segue from that because, as you know, and this is a fun question, but as you know, you've been able to surround yourself with really great, talented people who are just all about doing great work. And I know that you would be the first to admit you didn't get where you got on your own.
Nope.
So this question would be a fun one because you've certainly achieved a great level of success, as mentioned in the bio, that I could have continued probably going for another 5 minutes on.
I was thinking this as you were reading the bio. You were going like, he created this publishing company. I'm like, with Jason Santa Maria and Cattell Ledoux and originally Mandy Brown and with Aaron Cassane's advice before we even launched. Yeah, exactly.
I think I said the guy, but I should have said he's a guy behind. But yeah, and Eric Meyer, I know, you and Eric Meyer had this an event apart, Brainchild. So
we would meet. We would meet at South by Southwest for breakfast every year. Mm-hmm. And in this place, it doesn't exist anymore. And we would say, we should do a conference. And it should be the opposite of this, and not in a bad way, not like, because we loved South by, right?
Sure.
We were always going to South by. But what if there was a one-track conference that was small? It was like, what would that be like? And what if instead of all this, all these, what if it was really about design and, front-end development? What if it was just about that?
Yeah.
And it expanded and became more about more as the profession has, but that's really where it started. Eric and Marcy and Toby and Steven at an event apart. I mean, I don't know that the event would still even be, we're celebrating 10 years now. And we're calling it a decade apart.
I don't. Congratulations.
Thank you. We would not have hit that without Marcy and Toby. Mm. Toby's the producer, and Marcy is the one who does everything from get the room to pick out the donuts, the special donuts that are going to be a treat in the middle of the show.
I'll tell you, some of the best meals I've had at conferences have been at an event apart.
Thank you. Yeah, that's Marcy. We're. Everyone in the company is a foodie.
So with all of that, what would your UX design superhero name be, Jeffrey?
Oh, it could be Zeldman.
Ooh.
I should have a better answer, but when I thought of that question,
I like that.
My name is kind of like a superhero name, right?
Yeah, absolutely is.
Right.
That's
so
good.
And Zeldman means tent man.
Oh, wow.
Which is mercenary soldier, which kind of fits a designer.
Well, that totally works. Yeah.
Especially, when you basically come in and fix other people's problems and then leave. So
there it is.
The less, not the violent aspects, but the come in, defend the user.
There we go.
Kind of works.
Oh, it does. I love it. Zeldman. This episode is sponsored in part by User Testing, the fastest and most advanced user experience research platform on the market. There's nothing like watching and hearing from people using your product, and that's exactly the insight User Testing gives you. You get valuable feedback on websites, mobile apps, and prototypes from real people in your target audience. Set up your study in minutes and get video, written, and audio feedback in an hour. You can try User Testing for yourself for free by visiting peak.usertesting.com. Peak gives you a free 5-minute test on any website or app. One of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users, Jeffrey? Or Zeldman? How do you fight for your users, Zeldman?
I think it's a combination of listening, research, testing, and also just gut instinct.
Mm.
I think I don't want to underrate gut instinct.
Yeah.
I think two things. I think you have to have a tremendous instinct as a designer and say, I wouldn't do it this way. And then you have to test all those assumptions because you're often wrong, right? So we forget after a while, the longer we're designers, the more we think differently from other people. And therefore, the natural way that we would do something isn't really the way everyone else would. I remember pretty early in my career, I was creative director at a place that doesn't exist anymore. It was a victim of the dot-com era. Hmm. And the president of the agency said, I want you to put a home link here. And I said, they don't need that. They know that the logo. They just click the logo. And he said, they don't know that. You know that. They don't know that if they just click the logo, you need the home. I said, it's treating them like they're dumb. It's redundant. I don't like that. Mm. And it was just way before anyone in our field was talking about, God forbid, actually testing on a user. I said, well, I don't know any. He says, Amazon does. I said, Amazon does not do it. They have their logo. He said, Amazon does it. And they looked, and sure enough, there was the word home near next to their logo. There was a redundant link next to their logo. And I hadn't noticed it because I just assumed, I just saw the logo, and that was what I saw. I didn't see the word home, right? I saw what I was looking for, but another user would see what they were looking for. Hmm. And so I think, like I said, you have to have a feeling for what things work, and then you have to test. Also, I think we underestimate users a lot. I watch other people. I can't use a lot of stuff, but I watch other people use it easily. I couldn't use... wow, it still exists. This is a huge website that people use to, like, sell and trade things. Before Etsy. Hmm. They use it to, like, sell anything, things they own. You know what I'm talking about.
Is it eBay?
eBay.
eBay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I had a girlfriend that could, like, navigate eBay and get stuff. And she, like, the more hard it was to use and the more unobvious everything was,
yeah,
the more she just grasped it. And I've watched my kid.
Wow.
My daughter, you know, she's 11 now. She's been using the iPhone since she was 2. And she's, so she's come of age as the medium does. And she, you know, she went through a period of, like, you know, there's a lot of 99-cent apps you get for a little girl as she's growing up. So, like, she wanted dress up doll things. And it's like, you know, you do it. I mean, you do it as a parent. And some of them, the interface is clever, and some of them the interface is completely insane.
Yeah.
She always knows, and she's never had a problem figuring out any interface in a second, right? She just, I'll be going, well, logically, these groupings are working this way, so this one will work that way as well. She'll say, no, on this level, you do this. It's just like everything's gaming to her, and everything, and
yeah.
Games are inconsistent, and that's part of it. And I think a lot of users just have fun figuring stuff out on their own. I mean, we don't want to make it miserable. And if we're building a commerce site, we'd be very foolish to not make it as obvious as possible and keep removing layers of friction. But it's straight, no matter how good somebody is, I still, in everything that I use, there's always, why doesn't it work this way? I still ask myself why it doesn't work a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's me, but...
No, I agree. I totally agree. And I feel like... just a segue on that is, people will use our experiences, even if they're awful, if we have valuable content.
Yes,
that's kind of the point. It's like people will trudge through a really horrible UI and a horrible experience if we got great content. So how much more should we then always be striving to make it usable, make it as you know, best in class if we can? So
it's right. So eBay's proof of that.
Yeah,
Amazon, the website, is proof of that.
Mm-hmm.
People, I mean, obviously they know what works and they care, and everything they do, if they make one minor change and it affects 0.3% of users, it's another $1 million for them.
Yep.
So, like, all that stuff makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's terrible. And I have a Blu-ray player, mm-hmm. which I got mainly so that I could, so I don't have Apple TV, so that I could get Netflix and Amazon and streaming and Hulu on my TV if I want to watch with someone else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those things work so well on other devices. They work so well on phones and iPads, and they work pretty well on a computer, even if you have to, but terrible on the TV.
Yeah.
Terrible. And I go through, I mean, I can't even fathom Hulu never knows what I'm watching, what I just watched. It doesn't, but they've got the content, so I'll go through it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Amazon has a section on the TV called Your TV Shows that isn't my TV shows. It's TV shows that are free because I don't want to even get into it. Yeah. But I've actually there's so many decisions that are baffling and just crazy. But it doesn't matter because if I want to watch a Mel Brooks movie, even if it takes me 7 minutes to find it because of the way they're set up or because I have to use a remote to type in the search box. Oh, and just the way the search works on Amazon. it's they're Amazon.
Yeah, yeah.
In another silo, they've really figured this out. Why does, obviously one group isn't talking to another, and I get that. It's really like they're separate companies, but.
Yeah. Jeffrey, this is the last question of this section, but it's a big one. What does the future of UX look like to you?
Well, I think all the principles that we've been discussing are going to stay the same, right? So we're still going to be facilitating people uploading their own content and interacting with their friends' content, right, like on Facebook. And we're still going to be facilitating people watching professional content, reading professional content. I think there'll be a continuing blurring of the line between, there'll be some places where you can say that's the New York Times and that's some blogger. And there'll be plenty of other places where you can't really say what's journalism and what's blogging because, it'll be pretty close. There are plenty of blogs that are, really good and really thoughtful, and there are plenty of newspapers that are kind of sloppy. So, there's a continuum. I think how people interact think of what we're doing as making pictures that have touchable parts, right? And that, and obviously with more wearables and with smaller screens like on watches and who knows what else, there are going to be more things where we interact with using part of our bodies or we interact without looking at something. We interact to audio. I teach at School of Visual Arts once a week in a class called Selling Design, but it's really about career. But most of the things that the students study, and they're MFA candidates, it's about real interaction design, and it's fascinating. And very little of it has. They all know the web. They all get the web. They can all do the web, but it's so much more. And they it could be a box. It could be clothing. Could be a shoe. Could be a bell. Could be a tunnel that you're going through. I mean, there's so many places where there are sensors interacting with other sensors. And there are so many places where life can be made more convenient, easier, more fulfilling. I think we're going to be fine. Those are the challenges. The other challenges, I think, are keeping it human, keeping it real, yes, protecting privacy, because along with the really exciting possibilities from, the phone that always knows where I am and keeps a record of it, and the device that knows how many steps I've taken and everything else, the ability to spy and pry. I mean, my ex-wife on Facebook changed her at some point in our separation, and not to violate her privacy, but at some point, as any person would in this situation, she changed her thing from married to it's complicated or something or like that. Yeah. And all of a sudden, Facebook started sending me ads for singles things.
Oh, wow. It's
like, and I was like, that's Facebook. That's not even that surprising, right? They know in one place and they know. But it's when I see ads for something that I was looking at yesterday in a completely different place. And I forget what this is called, again, because I suck at retaining labels, but there's a whole name for this, and there's but there are these scripts, right, that follow you from site to site and all that stuff. And then how much does an advertiser know? How much does an advertiser get to know?
Yeah.
How much And government, well, there's our government and there's government of China or Iran, right? So it's every government has different rules about the rights of its citizens. Also, every government to some extent lies, right? Even when individuals sacred in a particular country, there's still people somewhere in the government bending the rules, always. So, yeah, I think we're going to have to be protecting people and liberating and empowering, but not enslaving. And that's always tricky. And, you know, it's just like, it's like that one glass of wine that makes things delightful and the seven that make you a poor, suffering bastard. And there's, there's an addiction component to our tech. There's an addiction component to, you know, man, I wake up at 3 a.m. and go back to sleep. And before I go back to sleep, I just check, you know, something on my device. And the next thing I know, I'm back, you know, I could be working.
Yeah, I love your answer, and there's so much there to let marinate, but I want to talk about, I just want to add on quickly to the making life easier. We just had our baby girl on the 18th, and she was in NICU for 5 days, and it was, I mean, just being in the hospital, and this is the second time we were in the hospital from the one before this, who unfortunately passed away, but being in there, living there for a month, there's so much room for disruption in the medical industry, one of the most advanced industries in life or death, literally life or death. There's so much room for disruption and innovation that I can't believe nobody's done yet. For example, the remote controls look like they were made when Laverne and Shirley first aired.
Right.
So, anyway.
Right. They can do microsurgery, laser beams. They can use cyclotrons to, like they they can operate on at the subcellular level. But at the same time, you have to tell people you're in, show your insurance card to 15 different people.
Yeah, right.
You have to keep filling out every
fill
time
out
I just
forms.
Go. You fill out these forms over and over, and I'm like, don't you have this?
Right.
I mean, I do want to protect my privacy, but if we're, it's the same medical practice too. You go from like one floor to another in this medical arts building, and you're like, okay, you've just seen the general practitioner. Now you're going to go talk to the hand surgeon, which like something I had to do recently. Hmm. And it's like, I'm walking in off the street and I have to fill all this stuff out again. And it's just,
it's annoying. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And it's, someone who's overworked answering phones is retyping what I'm saying or reading something I wrote in handwriting. Mm. And I'm like, wouldn't this be better on a computer?
Yeah. And don't get me started at the lack of empathy and humanity. It's unfortunately some of the people working at front desks of medical offices.
Yes.
That's my little pet peeve. And especially, we've seen a lot of people like that. It's like, you don't know what we've just been through.
When you have a young child that's suffering or an aging parent that's suffering, it can seem particularly gruesome and strange that that person. Oh, I remember my ex-wife and I felt like we were in Soviet Russia when my daughter was in the NICU. And we were like, we were in a civil war between the doctors who wanted us to say that we wouldn't breastfeed. I don't know why. And the... The lactation consultants who wanted us to say that we would breastfeed all the time for like 5 years at least. And we had to like figure out, we had to discuss it with them. And we had, and they, like the doctor would say, I understand you've talked to the such and such and that you won't be needing the formula then or whatever in like this huffy, snippy way. And I'm just like, geez, my daughter's in a fish tank right now.
Yeah.
She was just born and ripped out of our arms.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've carried her for 9 months, and then she's ripped away from her.
Yeah.
She's got a mask over her eyes, and you're being snippy about how we intend to feed her.
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
There. My gosh.
I feel you, man. Thank you for commiserating with me.
Yeah. There's... We lost a child also, and
I'm sorry.
And the guy was a bastard, like unbelievable. Like my ex-wife was describing pain she was having, and he said, "I don't want to hear what you read on the internet."
Oh wow!
He assumed.
Oh Lord!
And he left. And he left us. And this is you know. And we have good medical care.
Yeah,
we're lucky, right? We have good medical. So I don't know.
Yep.
Let's not go there. Let's just use it as an example of why we need to be decent, compassionate human beings toward others.
Amen. This episode is brought to you in part by Universal Mind, a digital design and consulting company based in Denver, Colorado. Whether you started as a digital company or not, we're all digital now, and that's been a tough transition for many organizations. Universal Mind helps mid to enterprise-sized companies find and deliver something valuable through design thinking workshops, UX design, and development consulting, and believes in supporting user defenders to help train and inspire the next generation of designers. Learn more at universalmind.com. Let's wrap up the show with imparting of superpowers. What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
Writing, absolutely. Mm. I mean, I say this all the time, so forgive me if it's boring and repetitive, but I really think I would not know what I believe if I didn't write it down and express it. I wouldn't know what I wouldn't have design opinions.
Mm.
I love instinct. I love working on instinct, but I really need to use words to just step back from the trance of doing design as a physical practice. Kind of like there's an art making part of design that's very, you know, you get in a zone and it's transient, it's lovely, right? But
yeah,
if you only are doing that, it becomes very subjective, and you might not necessarily be solving problems. Then you might also not be working on the thing that's most important. I find that writing has helped me, helped me get ideas out, like web standards, when that was a really important thing. It has helped me figure out before I give a presentation what it is I want to talk about. It has helped me figure out before I talk to a client. Usually I fall in love with my comp, and then later I realize how much it sucked. But at first I'm just in love with it because it's new.
Yep.
And I'm so in love with it that I'm not even being slightly critical about, did I actually solve the problem that I was hired to solve?
Yeah.
So stepping back and talking about helps. Stepping back and writing up, like, what did I just do and why did I do it, really helps. Of course, we can rationalize everything, right? So there's, you can use language as a tool of fraud. So you don't want to do that. And sometimes we don't know we're doing that. I mean, I can definitely make up a rationale for why I did something when the real reason is that red. I just had to use that red. But because it was beautiful. Hmm. But we studied and found that this demographic responded well to these, you know, you can use research to get what, you know, fake it. But trying not to do that. And that, anyway, that's a side issue. The main thing is just writing really helps. Hmm. And being open to other people's criticism really helps.
Yeah.
It's a really important, even if you do fall in love with something that you've just made. So maybe don't show it right away if you're feeling that, if you're that fragile and that protective. Wait a little while. But then it's okay if someone says, it's supposed to be as such and such. Well, I looked at it like this. Like, you know, they're not stupid. You didn't communicate.
Yeah.
You know, if someone doesn't get your idea, it means it's working better for you than it is for for people, and you're not going to be there to explain it to them.
Absolutely. Your ego is not your amigo, defenders.
Yes.
Right. And you, Jeffrey,
you need some of it, though. You need it.
You need some. Without it,
you need some, or you wouldn't do this work.
You need some. You're right. You do need some, but it's certainly not your best friend. It's not. But you inspired me, Jeffrey, to start writing and drawing again. So I thank you for that. You wrote out there. You said, "I won't hire anybody who doesn't write, who doesn't blog," and that really woke me up, because 15 years plus in doing this, enjoying a ton of blogs, learning a ton from blogs, and never really doing that myself. Again, going back to your unique voice and how everybody has something to offer. It really will open my eyes. So I thank you for inspiring me to do that.
Well, you've inspired me too. The show's been great. I love how, I love the filter that you've created for it. It's not just two people chatting about design.
Well, thank you.
right? Which, nothing wrong with that. I love two people chatting about design.
Oh, yeah.
But I like that you have a real focus, a real theme. And I think it's a strong one and a smart one.
Well, thank you. That means a ton. I love deep diving. I almost want to put my, I love going deep. And I having guests like you that are so open and vulnerable to do that really, really makes this show great. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, Jeffrey, what's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I don't. I think it's your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. You can
mic drop.
Do, yeah, I don't. Everything else is replaceable.
Mm.
And
wow.
You know, Jason still does everything in Illustrator, and I still use Photoshop. And I've gone through periods where I did everything in the browser, and then back to Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And some people sketches everything. Right. And some people it's Keynote, and all that's whatever works for you is great. Pencil and paper is great, mm-hmm. But ultimately it's your brain. And just being turned on and just never, you know, if you're bored, then start learning something. Start learning something new.
Yeah.
If you're bored, you shouldn't be in this field. I mean, and if you're restless and easily distracted, that's good. That's actually good because that means you'll keep learning, which you have to stay real.
Oh, love it. So a quick plug for a Book Apart books. I love the books and I've learned so much. And I feel like that you mentioned about reading somebody's words and you're like, man, I thought that, but you said it in such a way. I get that from every one of the books that a Book Apart releases.
They're all great authors. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm just learning, like what you said about not doing it yourself. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not. You know, Karen McGrain, Rachel Andrew, Ethan Marcotte, Josh Clark, Scott Gell, Jason Santa Maria, Dan Cederholm, Erica Hall, Aaron Walter, Luke Rablewski. Mm-hmm. It's crazy,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
David Demery now, and Dan Mall. And we have Eric Meyer and Sarah Watcher-Betcher.
Yes.
I say that wrong. I'm sorry. And she's a friend that I've known her for years. So I still say her name wrong.
Sarah, sure she'll forgive you.
It's Watcher-Betcher. Watcher Butcher. I can't, it's just, but they have this new book coming out.
Yes.
And it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
I started reading it. I'm already blown away. I can't put it down. So.
Right.
It's incredible. It's going to be life changing and game changing for sure.
I think it's a big thing. And, yeah. Yeah, and we made a decision a while ago not to talk about stuff that's coming that basically when it goes to print, then we can start saying that something's coming. Because one of our authors, doesn't matter who, we announced their book and then it took 3 years to finish it. And it was, and the pressure of having people ask this person every week on Twitter, hey, when's the book coming out? Just made it worse and more painful. So we made a decision. We don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But I wish sometimes that I could talk because we got some really cool stuff.
Well, we'll all keep a pulse on it, I promise you. And we'll continue having the authors as long as possible. We'll continue having them on the show as long as we can make that happen. And Cattell has been super great in helping to make that happen. Yeah. So my question in that was, if you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
I would say Don't Make Me Think by Steve Krug. This classic. Because, I mean, talk about user defenders.
Yeah.
It's a book about user experience. It's a book about usability, about designing for people, right? Designing for human beings.
Yep.
And early on, there's this wonderful cartoon where it's a meeting we've all been in, where the project manager is sitting there with a thought bubble with what's going on in her mind and what she needs, and the developer's thinking, you know, it would be really good to use the such and such framework now, and the designer's thinking whatever it is, right? Everybody's coming from a different place, and nobody's thinking about the user in that scenario. And that was that's how we approached projects when I started in this field. And I'm so glad we don't do that now. I'm so glad we figured out who's this for? It seems crazy, but we approached it the way, I don't know, the way musicians would approach an album or filmmakers would approach a film, right? They just, they don't, unless they're, and that's changing too, because Netflix now, right, they made House of Cards. Yes, they used an existing British property, but they did all this research on when do our users stop watching Kevin Spacey? What makes them keep watching Kevin Spacey? What kind of scenes that Kevin Spacey's in do they sit there and watch? And what, you know what I mean? They did all this stuff. How much sex do they want? How much violence? The fact is, it's a great show. So somehow they hired sufficiently talented people that they were able to execute against all those requirements the way we do, the way we execute against requirements. And I think as more and more of the media providers become media creators, I think that we'll see more of that, right? But
absolutely.
It's pretty interesting that it's all about the user. And that's what Steve Krug's book does such a great job of teaching you. And he's the one, and then later Jared Spool. But I initially had a chip on my shoulder when I heard about usability. And I thought, yeah, what's that? That's the guy. There's a particular practitioner from back in the day who was like, all the links must be blue and they must be underlined. And every designer hated this person. Not as a person. Like, I didn't wish him harm. But just hated that our clients were listening to that and were going to say, it's like, well, the name of our company is Orange and, we have to be blue. Well, you know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely know what you mean.
And then I read Steve Krug's book and I said, okay, now this makes sense.
Yeah.
This makes so much sense. And it changed what I think, it changed how I understood what I do. I really stopped thinking of it as making pictures.
Absolutely. And I know exactly who you're talking about. And I was one of those haters because I thought, I looked at his website and I said, if this is what usability looks like, I don't want any part of this as a creative person. But the good news is that he was right. He just wasn't very creative on the front end. So that's okay. And that's okay. He never said he was. But all the things he said were right. And things he said about Flash were right. Totally agree. And I think the great news is that we've come so far in this work that even clients now realize that design wins. And thankfully now we've all learned that form and function are a beautiful marriage and there shouldn't be one more than the other.
Totally agree.
Right on. So this is the last question of this segment, and it's one of my favorites. And I can't wait for your answer, Jeffrey, because you are my superhero, my design superhero, and I know that you are many, many others as well. So I just want to say, what's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
Don't be discouraged and don't stop. Don't settle. Don't stop and don't settle.
Yes. I love that. That's so good. And it's so simple and so profound. So that's awesome. This is a listener question, Jeffrey. It's from Farshad on Twitter at @FarshadAtIS.
Hi, Jason. It's Farshad again, and I have a question for Jeffrey. These days, most of users are using social media websites like Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and many other websites to create content and get information. For example, I spend less and less time on company site and get my information from their social channels. Do you think the need of web designing is going to be diminished in the future? I'd like to know what are your thoughts about this. Thanks.
Yeah, it's not dead, Farshad. It's definitely not dead. Who's doing the bulk of it might be changing. How we look at it might be changing. But there's more content than ever. Mm. And it's all being distributed via the internet. And even apps have to go back to the internet. You can say, well, Instagram's an app, but it has to have a robust web presence. When it didn't at first, it wasn't taking off. Once Facebook acquired them, they made the web presence and they blew up, right? Because it used to be that someone would put a picture on Instagram and they'd link to it on Twitter and you'd go there and it would say, why don't you download Instagram? And then you would, and you wouldn't have the picture, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know where it was, and the link would do you no good at all. It's all content, and it lives in multiple places. And it lives in websites that are experienced on desktops and on small devices and on new things that we haven't envisioned yet. But it's all structured with HTML, mm-hmm. and it's all powered by JavaScript, and it's all visually laid out with CSS and images, and that's not really going to change. You know, and half the apps that you think of as apps are really websites or web applications that just, you know, that use a limited set of special browser features or special device features, right?
Yeah.
So people think, you know, I remember a few years back, Jeff Croft wrote, it's the end of the web standards guru, because the way he interpreted it, web standards gurus were people who, first of all, how could there be web standards gurus? There shouldn't be more than three of those in the world.
That's true. That's kind of
there should be designers and developers. But right. But if somebody had been able to make a good living because they knew the 72 hacks it took to make floats work properly in IE, well, guess what? That's going away as your lead skill. So now you're going to have to, but you'll just have to know other code, and you'll have to know other things. And, you know, and when all the hacks go away at some future wonderful date, that'll be okay too, because then you'll be able to use code to do what it's supposed to do, right? So
yep.
I don't think it's going away. And people have been saying, well, the agencies are doing badly. And it depends. And I don't think that's true. I think clients are slower to pull the trigger, and more clients are taking their work in-house. So I think if you're a studio, an agency, you need to specialize, right? But there's, I've got in my studio, we've got one room here, a space apart. One room is for the Shopify partners. And these are freelancers, and, you know, they do work for Shopify and other freelance work, and they're all like, they're up to their necks in work. And my friend Fred has been doing this for 20 years. He started as a graphic designer. He's brilliant, and he's up to his neck in work. Like, we're really good friends, and I'll say, hey, you're free? And he's like, I'm stressed. I got work. Everybody, I sit here. I've got I share a room with Monkey Doo, and those guys are always busy. So,
nice.
You know, I make myself goof off at different parts of the day, just otherwise my brain can't take what I'm doing, right? So I make myself take breaks and play with something, right?
But yeah, you got to do it.
Like Pinterest now, or like just spend hours in Lightroom. But
it doesn't sound dead to me.
I don't think it's dead. No. I don't think people are going to suddenly stop using the web.
I just think it's changing.
It's changing. It's changing. It's like TV isn't dead just because Netflix is powerful and maybe NBC isn't, you know, one time NBC, CBS, and ABC were the kings.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like at one time record companies had more power than they do now, but music's not dead.
Yep.
And the way music gets consumed and is paid for, not dead.
Film is not dead. Same reasons. Yeah.
So the studios aren't doing it, and now some of the indie filmmakers, you know, they're not making films. They're making Boardwalk Empire instead. They're making vinyl instead. That's okay, right? I'm fine.
Perfect
with that. I think most of the directors that in the 90s I had to go to theaters to see, they're now on my little screen, which I'm getting on my computer, and I have a cable account only because it's the fastest way to get to the internet into my apartment. And I almost never turn on the cable box, right? Because it's like, I'll even forget that I have it. I'll be like, oh, this isn't on Hulu yet. And I'll go, oh, wait, I actually have famous cable. I'm not going to say the name of the cable company. And it's nothing against them, and they're fast internet. And
sure.
It's just I choosing to consume it a different way. So, yeah. Kevin Spacey was talking about this. Stories are very much alive. Stories with actors, directors, it's very much alive. It's, you know, it's like when people talk about redistribution of wealth, and it scares people, especially people with money. But it's always happening. That's always happening. So for maybe 20 years, it was the you know, or 30 years, it was the big movie studios, and then it was the independents, and now it's something else. Now it's Netflix or Amazon. But that's okay, and it'll be somebody else in 10 more years. I think if you really love web design, you might, and you were at an agency or a studio, you might want to go in-house. You don't have to. I think you can survive well in either environment. But, you know, I know some really talented designers who I've worked with who are now in-house at places because they want the pleasure. Well, I think they want the security, but they also want the pleasure of working on a certain project for years and years and years and trying to improve it. And I know what that's like because I used to think that web design was something I did to feed my List Apart habit, right? Yeah. That what I really wanted to do was have a magazine and keep improving it. And, you know, the improvements come slowly, but that's true when you work in-house too. I think I don't see people's need for content going away. I don't, you know.
Yep.
It's like when, and another, I mean, people say the newspaper's dead. Well, no, the printed newspaper, you know, they have to find different models, but people are still going to consume the news and someone's going to supply it. You know, so that's I think all these things are being disrupted. And I think our industry is getting disrupted too. And that can be very stressful, you know, and it gives you empathy for some of our clients. You know, like if you were the kind of web designer that did a lot of work for like old time publishers, like I've done, you know, I had empathy for them when they were having all this disruption. And now guess what? I'm having it too. That's okay. That's okay.
Perfect answer, Jeffrey. Now, as we close, can you tell us about the one thing you're working on that you're most excited about?
It's a secret.
Okay.
So I can't.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that it involves writing, designing, and coding something, which for a while now I've been a boss. So, and also, you know, you have someone, I have designers who are better designers than me or fresher designers than me. I have everyone working is like better than me. I hire people who are better than me and I get out of their way. Well, I'm nice. A little tired of that, right? So now I'm doing something myself and it feels great.
Awesome.
What it is, I can't tell you. In a few months, I can probably announce it. But but just making something and it's great to like jump back in and go. I mean, I'm talking to Mike Pick here from Monkey Do because we see, and I'm like, my float's not working right. He says, yeah, you don't have to do it that way now. Because I sat out some of this, right? I at a certain point, it's not that I ever stopped, but I was more in the nature of I might view source on something and ask a question, but I wasn't building stuff from scratch for a couple of years.
Sure.
And a lot has changed.
Yep.
So it's kind of fun. It's scary as hell, but it's also fun. And luckily, you know, I know who to follow, right? I know.
Yeah.
I know there are people now doing what I used to do who are out there like the forefront of HTML, right? Mm-hmm. Going, you know, so like, there was a time where I was like, yeah, you should maybe mark it up like this or maybe like this. Dan Cederholm went through a period of doing that. Now, Jeremy Keith has been doing it forever, and he's still doing it.
Yeah.
Bless him. So, like,
oh, yeah.
I'll go to Jeremy Keith and go, like, what does he think about the block quote? Right? Or or Tim Murtaugh, who I work with here, right, who's a really amazing front-end guy. Tim did do you remember pirated sites from back in the day?
Oh, yeah.
Pirates. So Tim Murtaugh was the creator of that, and then he and his partner Mike did Cloud King, which was an online art gallery for a while. Hmm. They've done a bunch of really interesting stuff. But we had a long, like if you look at the block quote, if you ever look at a block quote, if you view source on a block quote on a List Apart, you will see Tim's work, and it's, you know, it's more complicated than I'd like. This is a perfect example of me deferring, because part of me just wanted to go, I don't really care what Hixie says. I don't really care about what HTML5 says. It, you know, is a best practice. I think if you just put something in a block quote, you're done. That didn't need improving. It was fine. And Tim's like, well, and so we have like fig caption and like seven other, there's like 17 layers of sandwich inside the block quote. and so, you know, I've used source and copy and paste, and I don't even remember why half of it's there. And you know, that's an example of me deferring to someone who's got their sleeves rolled up more than I do. And but now I'm diving back in too, so I won't be completely in that position of, well, whatever you say. Back in my day, we put the milk in a churn and we stirred it with a ladle, and it'll be,
you know. Absolutely. And Jeffrey, yeah, I'm inspired by that answer, and I'm so inspired to hear that you are starting, you're going back to your roots and diving in and just getting your, rolling your sleeves up and just getting your hands dirty with where it all started for you and where it helped us all get to as well. So I'm inspired by that myself, and it makes me want to go and build stuff. And Dan Moll, I had the privilege of talking to him recently. And
I love that guy.
Oh, he's so great. Great interview on his, I think it was episode 13. But he was saying, practice what you do. And I think just the simplicity of that, but the profoundness of that is like, yeah, we just need to practice what we do, and we get better and better. And a lot of people that I've talked to, the privilege of talking to on the show, have just that's kind of the core message: just build something.
Yeah. So, although it also reminds me of the episode in Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. Do you ever watch that show?
I haven't, but I've heard great things.
Where I forget the guy's name, the sort of. The failed venture capitalist whose house they all move into, he's like, just make something. And he's eating ramen while he says it, and then he sucks up this long noodle, and it's like everything annoying about this time and people like us. But
fascinating.
I love that show.
Yeah, make something that matters. How about that?
And that's good.
And it makes a difference.
Well, that's what they all say, too. I want to make the world a better place with this camera app. Yeah.
Love it. And I don't know if I need to ask this question, but it's, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Okay. Well, probably the easiest things to do are on Twitter. I'm at Zeldman, Zeldman. And on the web, I'm at Zeldman.com and alistapart.com. And both those things link to everything else. So all those things.
Awesome.
I'm most active actually on, which is sad, but I'm most active on Twitter. It's sad because I used to be most active at Zeldman.com, and now, you know, I go where the audience is, and
that makes sense.
Lead networks, so
that makes perfect sense.
It does.
Well, Jeffrey, I just want to thank you, first of all, for your generosity and your time. I know we went way over than what I originally said, so I apologize, and I appreciate you hanging in there and being willing to go the distance.
You're a great interviewer, and I had a ball, so
thank you.
Problem at all. And wonderful questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I kind of feel like Daisy Ridley, who her first movie was the Star Wars movie. Where do you go from there? So having you on the show, I'm like, where do I go from here? No.
Plenty of places, but thank you.
I absolutely have enjoyed our conversation. It's been a great pleasure. And I just want to say, fight on, my friend.
You too. You too.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jason.
Such a great interview with Zeld Man. I love that. Who knew his superhero name was right in front of us all this time? I was so humbled by Jeffrey's warm comments about me and this show, and I'll be floating on those for quite some time. Jeffrey has taught me so much about leadership and how great leaders lift others above themselves. Such a humble guy and so instrumental and influential to where the web and our work therein is today. Listen, if you're enjoying the show, would you offer your superpower of support and leave a rating and review on iTunes? It would mean so much to me, and it always empowers me to keep fighting on. I want to thank Cesar Limas for the astonishing superhero artwork, Chris Combs for the superhuman editing, and Wyman Gentry for the compelling show music. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next time, fight on, my friends.